Hi, everyone. It's Doug here with another of our Staff Pick podcasts. And by the way, thanks for checking in during our summer break. So today's show comes from 2012, and we wanted to do something with this painting that had been getting people's attention all over the country that year. It was from an artist in Provo, a pretty conservative guy named John McNaughton. And at the time, he had depicted President Obama holding the Constitution as it burns, like actually on fire, which is not terribly subtle. And of course, some argued not really great art. But we wanted to talk to him, and we wanted to talk about his pictures, which he has continued to make, by the way. McNaughton is going to town on Donald Trump paintings. He's a big supporter, of course. So there's this one painting with Trump actually crossing the Delaware, like President Washington. So our show was about how political views often get made into art. So here it is, Radio West from March of 2012. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The Provo-based artist John McNaughton has called his latest painting One Nation Under Socialism. It's a dark and striking image packed with political symbols and themes, but there's nothing terribly complicated about the picture itself. It's President Obama with a severe expression, one hand holding the Constitution, the other one pointing at the document, which just so happens to be on fire. The Constitution is going up in flames. Now, you've heard that expression in political disputes, but Mr. McNaughton has made it real in his painting. And it's getting a lot of attention these days, but it's not the first time he's created controversy by superimposing his conservative values into his work. Last year, McNaughton painted President Obama with his foot on the Constitution as the country's former presidents and founding fathers react. That painting was removed from the Brigham Young University bookstore. McNaughton responded by pulling all of his work from that store. His paintings caught our eye this week and raised some questions about that intersection of art and ideology, the use of images to convey religious concepts or political positions. Joining us first on the program is John McNaughton. He's an artist who creates landscape, religious, and patriotic-themed paintings. He graduated from Brigham Young University with a degree in design. His studio is in the Provo Town Center Mall, and Mr. McNaughton is joining us by phone today from his home in Provo. And John McNaughton, welcome. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, I wanted to get your reaction to the reaction, how this has become sort of a national story in many ways. You're getting a lot of attention, the painting. People are supportive. People are critical. What are you making of the reaction?
Well, I knew that when I painted it that it would have a divided reaction. The country is very divided right now. Yeah. There's people that feel strongly the way I do and those that are in defense of what President Obama is doing. And they're the ones that are the most upset about the painting because it is a very straightforward message. But it's a message that I think is important, and the reason I painted it is I want people to talk about, you know, what it means to be one nation under socialism and to get that discussion going.
You said this to, I think it was the Salt Lake Tribune, you said, in reaction to the question of people, some people being offended by it, you said something to the effect that I'm offended I had to paint it.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I feel like in our country that, you know, the country that we live in, you know, we were set up under our Constitution to be a republic and to, you know, have the liberties that we enjoy. And I feel like those are being threatened today, not just by Obama. We've been moving that direction, you know, for over 100 years. But we're really in overdrive right now is how I see it. And so, you know, I felt sad as I painted this picture. It wasn't a pleasant thing to do.
But you felt compelled to do it?
I did. You know, all these political type paintings started back in 2008. You know, I think that I really woke up to what was happening in our country when Bush was president. You know, when I saw the Patriot Act passed and all the bailouts towards the end of his presidency. You know, I used to be a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, and now I don't really look at parties the same. You know, I look at our country as having some problems. And I feel like, as an artist, I have an opportunity to communicate how I feel about what's happening, and I just use my paintings as a way to do that.
Did you feel you're a very religious person, I gather. Did you feel inspired by God to make this painting?
Well, you know, if you're a Christian, you feel that everything in your life is kind of in a relation to the inspiration you receive from God. So, you know, I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And, you know, there's people who are Christian and religious who feel vehemently opposite of the way I do, and that's their right. But I feel like I'm doing the right thing, and, you know, I'll keep doing that until I feel like I should do something different.
How do you figure, Mr. McNaughton, your Mormon faith informs your political view, the view that brought you to make this particular
thing? Yeah, you know, that's a good question. You know, obviously, the Mormon faith is predominantly conservative. There is an element of liberalism among us. And the church has a position where they stay neutral on a lot of this, and I think they should. But as members of the church, we're admonished to be involved politically, you know, and to, you know, share our values and speak our mind, as long as we do so, you know, without, you know, being violent or so forth.
Yeah.
And I believe, you know, I would say that my paintings are probably influenced by my Mormon faith. You know, the LDS Church believes that the Constitution was divinely inspired. And, you know, that's, I'm sure, had an effect on how I view things. But this is not a, you know, something that's only in the LDS faith. There's a lot of Christians around the country that feel the same way. It is a divinely inspired document. And even if it wasn't something that the church admonished, you know, I personally, I look at the great blessings that our country has brought to the world that would not have been able to occur without the freedom that we enjoy under the Constitution. And so I do believe that it's an inspired document.
You know, one of the questions that the painting has raised is the quality of feeling that it evokes. I mean, it's very dark. You've admitted that yourself. Mm-hmm. To some, it's really well, I would say to pretty much everyone, it's pretty disturbing.
It is.
Now, I'm sure you've heard it described even, and I'll get you to respond to this, but as even hateful. And I want to go to a Mormon scripture was brought to our attention this week, and I wanted to read it to you and tell me how this idea within the Book of Mormon fits into what some are seeing in the expression of this painting. And it comes from 3 Nephi, and you're familiar with it, I'm sure. Verily I say unto you, that he that hath the spirit of contention is not of me, but is of the devil. This is not my doctrine to stir up the hearts of men with anger one against another. Now, how does a painting like that evokes such strong feelings, line up with this idea of the spirit of contention being something bad?
Well, you know, I read that scripture a little differently. I see it as the spirit of contention in terms of its relation to the gospel. And, you know, Christ's message, you know, he was talking about contention in the church among doctrine and so forth. Hmm. I think that, you know, the Lord expects us to stand up for what we believe. I mean, even in church history, you look at the, you know, what happened in the early church among the saints with Joseph Smith. I mean, he often spoke out against things that he believed in, and that was a source of great contention. You know, I think that we have to stand up for what we believe. That doesn't mean we're violent. Mm. And I'm not hateful. You know, I don't hate liberals. I've got a lot of friends who are... I don't even hate Obama. But I feel a great sense of obligation to wake up, you know, people who are not, you know, aware of what's happening in our country. Mm. You know, would you call the founding fathers and the early patriots of our country as hateful for standing up against the King of England? I don't think so. I think that we need to wake up at this time in our history and look at what's happening in our country and decide if this is what we want. Do we want one nation under socialism? If we do, our Constitution will be gone. And I firmly believe that if Obama's reelected with the rate things are going, that under his second term as president, that we could see our Constitution literally dissolve before our eyes. And that may sound extreme to some people, but that's the question I want people asking, and that's why I painted the picture.
Do you think President Obama is directly out to truly out to undermine the Constitution, or that he's just unintentionally undermining the Constitution?
Well,
through his
I think he has his own vision of what he wants America to become.
Right.
You know, I think that that vision obviously is different from what a lot of conservatives want. And so we're having a war of ideas,
But the question is this. Mm-hmm. Does he want to undermine the – is he out to undermine the Constitution in the sense that doesn't appreciate it, doesn't respect it, and therefore wants to transform it into something else?
Well, you know, I don't know his heart.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at, for example, Obamacare. I mean, right now that's going in front of the Supreme Court. And it's an unprecedented thing that's never happened in the history of our country. You have 26 states that are suing the federal government because of the feeling that they're being forced to purchase this health insurance, which, you know, a lot of people believe is completely unconstitutional. And I know that Obama knew exactly what he was doing when he did it. I mean, he's trying to do what he thinks is best for America.
So you do believe that?
I don't agree that it's going to help America.
Okay, so you do believe that, even though you don't agree with him, that Mr. Obama does have the best interests of the country in mind?
Like I said, I don't know his heart. Yeah. I have to believe that he...
But take a guess at his heart.
Okay, take a guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in his way he's helping people because he wants to help the poor, and everybody wants to help the poor. It's just that I don't think it's the government's job to redistribute the wealth in the country. You know, that humble opinion, that's not consistent with the Constitution, which provides equal rights for everybody, but not equal things. And that's where you draw the distinction.
I wanted to ask you about this idea of, and you've heard this yourself. I mean, people are wondering, why would you have to question the president's patriotism or his commitment to freedom? Why can't you say, you know, I don't agree, but I know we're all on the same side of something. You know, I know we have different beliefs about what the Constitution may say, but why question someone's, you know, patriotism or their love of freedom or their regard for this country?
Well, you know, I can only judge somebody by their actions. You know, only God can judge what's in somebody's heart. And based on the actions that I've seen President Obama and other presidents do, you know, I feel like their intentions are not based on, you know, constitutional principles. And so, you know, Republicans and conservatives for a long time have been very quiet. You know, I think most conservatives tend to go about their business. They try to be good citizens, and they don't get involved very much. You know, it's the other side of the aisle that tends to be a little more active in these things. And I think that because of our quietness, that it's led to some, you know, what I consider terrible problems in Washington. You know, you saw the Tea Party rise up in the last few years, and that's got the attention more, you know, in Washington. I'm not a Tea Party member, although I, you know, agree with a lot of what they do. But, you know, I just think that conservatives need to speak their mind. And as an artist, I can't think of a better way to bring about my personal beliefs and express myself than through my paintings.
Mm. You know, this question has come up too. Even for someone who agreed with your ideas,
mm-hmm.
why would someone? And people are. Why would someone buy a painting like that? And where?
That's a good question.
Yeah, and where would you put a painting?
I did this
like
painting,
that?
And I knew it would go out. It would go all over the internet. I knew that would happen.
Yeah.
I did not expect to sell many of these. In fact, the first time I did a political painting, my business partner said, "John, nobody's going to buy a single one of these." And I felt like, well, I just want to paint it anyway because it needs to be said. And these have become my biggest selling prints. I can't even hardly print them fast enough. And I have a theory about this, and that is, you know, I used to paint a picture and people would hang it because it matched their couch or felt good to look at.
Yeah.
You know, things have changed in the market, and I've noticed that people now buy art because it makes a statement.
Right.
You know, they believe about what it represents. I don't know if they're hanging it above their dining room table, but they're hanging it somewhere.
Where?
I don't know.
Where do you figure they're hanging this stuff?
They could be their office. It could be in their living room. They could be just buying them so that they can, you know, have a piece of history. You know, I think that that One Nation Under Socialism painting is going to become a historical icon that represents how the right feels about this time in our history. It's a phenomenon is what it is, and I'm going to just probably keep painting pictures that make people think and make them feel, and if they don't agree with them, you know, that's just how it is, I guess.
So you're not going back to landscapes and portraits. You're staying with this theme?
Well, I'll continue to paint landscapes and portraits. If you look at my website, only maybe 3 or 4% of it is the patriotic paintings. But right now, I feel like that's what I need to focus on, or doing these what I consider patriotic paintings.
What is art for you? That is such a huge question.
That's a good question. When I was in college, we took a class once, and all we did was talk about that question: what is art? You know, and everybody had different answers. And you know, personally, I think that it's any kind of expression. Human expression that causes people to think and to feel. And, you know, you can break that down and say, well, there's good art and there's bad art. But, you know, usually that's in the eye of the beholder. As for me, you know, if it can cause people to think and feel, then I can't think of anything better. You know, I had a guy come in my gallery one time, and he said, you know, when you mix politics and religion, that is not art. And I thought about it for a second, and I said, you know, that's exactly what art is. Because if it gets you to think and feel on that level and that intensity, I can't think of anything that's better. And I know that's a lot different than they teach in most art schools. I'm kind of a non-conventional thinker that way, but that's just how I feel about it.
Well, in the sense, too, I guess, that you're kind of unconventional in that you... your images are pretty straightforward. They're pretty literal. Now people are criticizing the painting for that it's, you know, didactic, that it's
well, on the top level they are very didactic.
Yeah.
But if you look at them closely, there's a lot of subtleties in the painting, different layers of meaning. I haven't even revealed all the layers of meaning in the One Nation Under Socialism. I mean, I haven't even begun to talk about it. I sold that painting to Sean Hannity a few days ago, and I'm going back to New York next week, and I'm going to tell him the rest of the story behind that painting. And it's the same with my other paintings. In fact, one of the other things I do that's very unconventional is on my website, you can move your cursor around the paintings, and there's pop-ups, and it tells you more about it. You know, and I want people to know everything that I'm thinking about the painting. Well, not everything, but a lot, because I use them as educational tools.
You know, but a lot of artists, they make the images and they leave it up to the person viewing it to make their own interpretation of it. Are you saying that this is what this means? This is literally what this means?
Well, you know, 95% of the people that see my paintings aren't going to take the effort to learn more about them. They're going to come up with their own meanings.
Sure.
And they do bring their own messages to them. You know, even those who see the One Nation Under Socialism, it seems like it's very straightforward. You know, it is what it is. But I read some of the interpretations about the painting, and there's a whole variety of interpretations to the painting. People think they understand it. They think they've nailed it, and they don't always get it right. So, you know, I think that art is art. People will still interpret it the way they want, but if they really want to know what I mean in the painting, they go to my website and they can read about it.
You mind taking a call?
Sure.
Rachel is with us in Heber City. Rachel, welcome.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess my question is for the artist, what his definition of socialism is. Because it's such a charged word right now.
Oh, it is.
And there are so many, like, socialist programs in the country that have worked really well. Like, our public education could be considered, you know, socialism. Social Security could be considered socialism. And those do a great benefit to our country. So I just, I'm kind of curious why, you know, socialism is such a dirty word. And also, like, after the Patriot Act, why not a picture of President Bush with the Constitution on fire?
Well, you got three questions there. I'll try to remember them all.
I'll try to keep track.
The definition of socialism, you know, like you said, there are a variety of definitions. There's different kinds of socialism. And I think our country is more of a democratic, socialistic, or moving towards that direction, kind of like the European model style, where, you know, the government starts to take ownership of, you know, different businesses and things of that nature. And, you know, it's more of equaling the playing field, you know, instead of a, more of a capitalistic society. And that's a very simplistic definition. And I think, I'm not saying our country is socialistic. I mean, we haven't completely moved in that, completely rounded out that definition. But we have been moving that direction for a long time. You know, we do have programs like Social Security and Medicare and our public education. And the thing is, if you look at those programs, even though they have done some good, I think in many cases they've been a complete failure. You look at Social Security and how it's bankrupting, and Medicaid, how it's bankrupting our country. You know, there's the American people, if you look back before Social Security was even brought about, we were doing fine. And I think you know, there's other solutions besides that. And as far as the educational system in America, I have reservations with that as well. You know, we have a lot of great teachers, but you look at the way our educational system has changed in America over the last 50 years, and, you know, we used to be rated among the highest in the world for education, and those ratings have dropped. You know, socialism, you know, wants to make everyone the same and everyone equal and wants to provide for everybody. But often, you know, when you get the federal government involved, it leads to disaster. And, you know, just look at what's happened over in Europe. Do we want to become a country like Greece or Portugal, Italy? I mean, Greece is going up in flames right now, basically. You know, even the government over in Great Britain is struggling. You know, do we want our health care system to be like Great Britain? I mean, there's people over there that are coming to America to try to get better health care, even from Canada. So, I mean, there's a lot of arguments to be made about that. And
we won't get to them all, but how about the question of did you ever conceive of President Bush burning the Constitution?
Oh,
after?
Well, you know what? Like I said before, I woke up when President Bush started to go the direction he is. He is a progressive Republican, and you know, I voted for Bush, but by the end of his presidency, I woke up. You know, when he passed the Patriot Act, you know, and some of the things he did with Medicare, I was like, oh, wait a minute, you know, this isn't right. Then when he bailed out, you know, AIG towards the end of his presidency, I was up in arms. And that's when I decided to start painting these pictures. But you know what? I can't go back. He's not the president anymore. And I mean, if I had been alive in the days of FDR, I probably would have tried to paint something back then.
Yeah.
So my focus is on Obama.
Yeah. Let me ask you this: is President Obama? I've never heard you say President Obama. I've heard you say Obama a lot. I'm not sure if that is meaningful or if it's just a shorthand.
Well, it's a shorthand. I call him President Obama.
Okay.
Obama. I don't make fun of President Obama. I don't paint him or ridicule him the way he looks, like a political cartoonist would.
Right.
Every time I paint him, I try to paint him serious. You know, I try to instill in the painting the feelings that I have. But, you know, I respect the office of the president, but I do not respect the actions that are taking place under this administration.
He's a legitimate president in your mind?
Oh, yeah, he's a legitimate president. I just think that he's doing things that are unconstitutional.
All right, what's the next idea? Do you have it?
I've got a few ideas coming down the pike.
It sounds like you're going to keep him to yourself.
My next painting is going to be called The Empowered Man, and it's a political one. And I'm not going to, you know, give away the whole painting idea, but that's kind of what's coming down the pike.
What was the idea that got you started on it, though?
I just look at these paintings as kind of a continuation. One leads to the next. I put a lot of thought into these pictures, and you know, I hope people will respond and thoughtfully when they see them. But you know, I guess we're kind of ingrained, many of us, with you know, who we are, and some people will see these pictures and immediately react with anger. So some will say, that's exactly how I feel. But, the ones I'm the most interested are the ones that look at them and say, I don't get it. And I hope that they will take the time to try to figure out what I'm trying to say in my paintings.
That's John McNaughton. He's a Provo-based painter. His studio is in the Provo Town Center Mall. You can find a link to his website at ours, KUER.org/Radio West. Mr. McNaughton, thanks for the time.
Thanks, Doug.
We'll take a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
I'm Elaine Clark, the managing editor of KUER News. As part of our statewide mission, we want you to tell us about the issues that matter to your community. What should we be covering where you live? What stories need to be told? Help us improve our service around Utah by answering a few short questions. Complete our feedback form at KUER.org/feedback.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Provo painter John McNaughton is getting attention for his latest work. It's called One Nation Under Socialism. It depicts President Obama holding a constitution as it burns. Now, art critics haven't been terribly impressed with the painting. It's been called junk, visually dead as a doornail. It's didactic, prosaic. McNaughton isn't worried about impressing the arts community, though. He says his goal is to communicate a political opinion. And today in the program, we're talking about the painting and talking about blending art and religion and politics into art. Joining us now on the program is Benjamin Park. He's a scholar and a blogger on Mormonism and American religious and cultural history. He's a PhD candidate at the University of Cambridge in England. He's written about McNaughton's work at the online magazine Patheos, and he's also contributes to the new column Peculiar People, and he's joining us from the BBC studios in Cambridge. Benjamin Park, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Adam Bateman is joining us. He's here in the studio. He's a Utah-based artist whose work has been shown in New York, L.A., and at the BYU Museum of Art. He also directs the Central Utah Art Center in Ephraim, also teaches at Weber State University. Adam, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Doug.
Benjamin Park, first to you. Gosh, this is such a fraught question. Is what Mr. McNaughton is doing, is it art?
Well, I guess it's a very subjective question. If you look at the historical tradition, though, I think you would consider him on the fringe, if not, outside of those boundaries. As you mentioned in talking with him, art is typically used as a venue to express things that are somewhat ineffable, something you can't capture with words. It transcends a message or points to complexity, nuance, and opinions. But I think, and McNaughton even pointed this out, he's not really interested in that. He makes sure to interpret his art for us. He points out his cursor tools on his website, which I think are a fascinating and important glimpse into how he views art. He said he wants his audience to know everything he's thinking about. And so even with One Nation Under Socialism, where he doesn't have those cursor tools, the message is as clear as possible, down to almost the meme-like font used to announce the painting's title on the very canvas. So I think in his art, or his definition of art, there is no room for nuance. Everything's still black and white and dichotomous.
So Adam Bateman, does that disqualify it? Because he tells you this, the burning, I mean, means this, and the this means that. Does that disqualify it?
Well, it makes it a little boring, at least. I mean, it seems to me like Benjamin was saying that art is often about expressing nuance. I mean, I use this example that everyone that can write is not a poet, and in the same way, everyone that can paint is not an artist. And I think that that what a poet does is they take language and they create nuance and they create multiple levels of meaning by using language. And I think artists, visual artists, do the very same thing. And I think that that's kind of a big part of what's lacking in McNaughton's work.
Benjamin Park, where does this come from? Is it coming from a particular sentiment that you're seeing a lot of these days?
Well, I think there's somewhat two cultural genealogies that are leading into them. The first, there's undoubtedly the Mormon tradition leading into them, where Mormon art has traditionally skirted the lines between classical art and Kish, where everything is rather clear and didactic. And so I think that's leading into it. I think second, especially with his patriotic paintings, which he always clarifies are patriotic paintings, not political paintings, which I think is an important key to him. But are political cartoons, something that's just using illustration as a venue through which to present a polemical message. And I think that's a more influential strain leading to his work.
What's interesting about John McNaughton for you? I mean, you've been following him now. You see his paintings. They seem, you know, kind of provocative. Some say they're a little prosaic and, you know, not terribly interesting. But what interests you about John McNaughton and his work?
I think mostly the culture that he's speaking from and speaking to. I mean, to think about with a political cartoon, it's something that you just see and you laugh at. And with the case with McNaughton's work, it's more of an echo chambers. It's just reaffirming an already present message as opposed to making you actually think about the topic. But with political cartoons or a lot of these other type of works that lead up to McNaughton's art, this is an artwork. It's supposed to hang on your wall. It's not supposed to be just folded up in your newspaper or hung on your fridge. You're supposed to dedicate a portion of your living room or whatever portion of your house you're hanging your artwork of the burning themes. And it just shows such a deep angst that I think is spilling into and making blurry these boundaries between different venues of artistic expression.
Adam Bateman, do you see this, whether or not you like the particular painting, do you see a lot of this? It's hard to put it in ideology to say, do you see this on the left? But I guess you could say it that way. Do you see a similar kind of didacticism in other kinds of paintings expressing other kinds of points of view?
Absolutely. I think the McNaughton's not going to like this comparison, but I think about Michael Moore a lot when I look at McNaughton's work. I feel like Michael Moore makes documentaries that aren't particularly well-made
nuanced.
or nuanced, yeah. But people who already like what he has to say, they eat them up. They spend a lot of money to go see them, and they become best-selling documentaries. And I think that Michael Moore has discovered a way to make money making documentaries by selling something what they want to see, and I think the McNaughton's done the very same thing.
So there's some marketing in this, you think?
Yeah, I think it's a lot about marketing. I think that, you know, McNaughton talked about earlier about having a business partner and how his business partner was afraid that maybe these political paintings or patriotic paintings wouldn't sell.
Yeah.
And he's discovered that they sell better than anything else, and he keeps making them. And
it doesn't hurt that you're on Sean Hannity's show.
It doesn't hurt at all. But I think that had he painted a painting like you discussed earlier of President Bush burning the Constitution, it wouldn't sell. It would be expressing the same kind of ideas about you know, the deterioration or the perceived deterioration of the Constitution or something like that, but it wouldn't sell because it wouldn't be selling this imagery and this iconography that's easily digestible that his market wants to buy.
You've talked, Adam, about artists like Warhol, a lot of sort of in the pop art movement, who made art that became at first, you know, was kind of rejected and then became really marketable.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. It's really disingenuous for a contemporary artist to pretend like the art's not about money. I mean, Warhol's a great example. Jeff Koons, Damien Hirst are two of the top-selling artists in the world right now. And the thing about those guys is their work is even about the market and it's about money. And I think that saying that making money in art, you know, makes it not art is disingenuous. I do think, however, there's an important distinction, and that is that Koons and Warhol and Hirst, I think, are doing things that create culture. They interact with an art historical dialogue. They engage in that. They make something that that challenges us, and it becomes so influential that the way they make money is they make money in art speculation, where people say, "Wow, this person is so influential that they're going to totally change art and they're going to change culture. I'm going to buy one of their paintings."
They're speculating.
They're speculating. I think McNaughton, on the other hand, is producing essentially kitsch, where he's saying this is a thing that people will buy. It's calculated. It's like making a painting of a puppy. People like puppies. They think, okay, I'm going to buy a painting of a puppy because I like them. I don't like Obama, so I'm going to buy a painting that shows Obama burning the Constitution. This is something that confirms my beliefs, makes me feel good. And so the difference is whether the money comes first, whether the marketing comes first, or whether the influence of ideas and the revolutionary thought comes first.
I think to build off of what Adam was saying there for a moment, I think it's fascinating to if McNaughton is speaking to a culture that's wanting to buy these, and I think that economic perspective is fascinating. It's fascinating to then get a glimpse into that culture that's buying this, because I mean, this is now a culture that wants things very simple. I mean, this is the age of Twitter, where everything has to fit within 140 characters, and everything wants simple. I don't want to have to think much about what I'm seeing. I just want to see it, and boom, there it is, and it either reaffirms or I reject what's going on. And I think McNaughton's work is a key symbol of that type of simple culture that's really yearning for a way to make sense of a world that's becoming increasingly complex.
Yeah. Additionally, I think that that as we discuss this idea of sort of the kitsch nature of what he's doing, I think it's be interesting to maybe have a little art historical context of this. I mean, I think that making religious paintings and landscape paintings, he's talked about his paintings wanting to inspire people and wanting to create this like sense of enlightenment or even transcendence for them. And that idea is not new to art. It's been around for a long time. A really great example comes from like the Hudson River School of painters that were contemporaries of guys like Henry David Thoreau. And they were all about the sublime as it came from the landscape. Well, the big critique of those guys that happened in 1940s, 1950s by people like Mark Rothko was that they weren't producing an authentic experience of the sublime for their viewers. Rather, they were making this small landscape that reminded the viewers of some previous experience that they had had. It was nostalgic, a reminder of some experience they'd had where they felt overwhelmed by the landscape. So Rothko first tried to make an authentic experience for people by surrounding them with color. Later on, there's a contemporary artist named Olafur Eliasson who actually like makes it rain in the gallery, or made the sunset in the Tate Modern. And he is trying to achieve making an environment and a landscape type environment totally surround you in a museum setting. He's going for an authentic sort of expression of the sublime. And I think that's what's kind of missing in McNaughton's work, is that rather than being an authentic expression or a transformative experience for the viewer, it just simply confirms what they already believe.
But I wonder, Benjamin Park, do you think that this is a reflection of the conversation going on in Christianity in general, not just in Mormonism, but you know, the literal interpretation of the Bible? The Bible says this, and the other view of it, which is that the Bible is packed with symbols and stories that aren't necessarily to be taken literally. Do you know what I mean? Is there a similar thing going on here?
Very much so. There is a wonderful book that just came out by Randall Stevens and a co-author whose name is slipping my mind on called The Anointed, Evangelical Truth in a Secular Age. And even though evangelicals and Mormons seem to have an ontological gap between the two, I think there's important similarities here to where in modernity, in a period where we have these increasingly secular-dominated ideas and a separation between church and universities and knowledge, you have a strain of people looking for experts who are reaffirming a fundamentalist mindset, who are trying to make things as simple as possible and reaffirm almost a simpler age. You know, that's why in McNaughton's work, you have the founders standing supreme, because they're coming from a simpler age where everything makes sense. The fundamental truths placed against the corruption of modernity. And I think that's a prime influence that's going on in McNaughton's work, which is what makes McNaughton's work not only Mormon, but almost deeply fundamentalist Christian in America.
Let's take a few calls. Mike, sorry for the wait. Mike's calling from Salt Lake, by the way.
Yeah, you bet. First of all, I'm not an artist. I'm just a guy that tries to understand things, and I was a voting district chairman for 15 years for the Republican Party, and like McNaughton, I kind of left it when Bush went into the Iraq War and lied to us. But I don't like that picture. I think having a leader like President Obama, we've got a lot of problems right now, and he's got a lot on his shoulders, and we need to address all these problems from the wars, the debt, the disparagement of income, the wealthy getting most of the reward, and the rest of us picking up the burden of debt, and students who have $1 trillion in student loans that they can't put into bankruptcy like the home mortgage, everything, and now this health care thing, and our family's been personally impacted by that, with my sister declaring medical bankruptcy because they had over $1 million in medical bills, and they were good Republicans, and they did their best to try and pay the bill, do the responsible thing, but at age 60, they lost their house.
Yeah.
And we have over 1 million people in this country, or about 1 million people, that declare medical bankruptcy because of medical bills, and 75% of those folks have health insurance that doesn't pay.
So, Mike, I'm going to sort of abbreviate your comment, if you'll forgive me, because we're running out of time. What you're saying is a lot of problems. This kind of thing just doesn't help. Is that
it? Correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. Glad you called. Thanks very much.
Can I comment on that really
quickly?
Of course. I think one of the things about this kind of painting or illustration style, when something's highly politically charged, it makes people impassioned about the issues rather than being about the art and rather than being about the ideas that McNaughton's trying to express. I think that's something that's problematic with his work in general.
Here's another comment from the website. I see Mr. McNaughton's painting as incendiary, pun intended. He's exploiting people's fear and hatred of our president to feed those feelings, and he's making a load of money while at it. Here's another one. McNaughton's views seem to – I'm not sure – I don't have a name here. Forgive me. McNaughton's views seem to be pretty shallow. His understanding of the issue seems to be about as deep as one would get by listening to Fox News or Rush Limbaugh. He speaks only in generalities about the issues that face us with no specifics regarding the policy he disagrees with. Well, back to Mike's question, Benjamin Park, that it's not helping. And I read to him, I'm not sure if you heard that Mormon scripture about contention. Is this a Mormon thing? You know, it doesn't seem like a Mormon thing, the provocative nature of something like that, or is it?
No, I think you're exactly right that while McNaughton is drawing on some central elements within Mormonism and his art, a collapse between sacred and profane and all that, I think he diverges from what you point out is, I think, a very important part of Mormonism is let there be no contention. I think Mormonism, speaking from a Mormon historical perspective, Mormons have always been what you would call, or what you wouldn't call in today's parlance, progressive, meaning that they think they can get together and work out ideas. If you just get everyone able to sit down around the table and discuss things, we'll be able to reach across the aisle and come to compromises that's going to make everyone feel happier about it. But yet, what McNaughton's work is doing, it's just further dividing the people. It's further cementing the differences and the hatred, and it's going to make it so that pragmatism continues to be a bad word in political discourse.
Matt in Ogden had a question that I wanted to kind of end with, and he was raising this question about he says that to anybody who studies paintings, quality is seriously lacking in Mr. McNaughton's work. There's a kind of one-dimensional quality, he says. The fact is he just can't paint. I mean, let me end with that. The idea of the subjective nature of whether it's any good, where does that come into play?
Well, I think that Matt from Ogden is probably Matt Chaburka, who's a really great painter, and he probably knows what he's talking about. I think that that there is some measure of being able to have quality judgment about something like this, and I think that that's that's what artists try to do. I mean, there's this big academic dialogue. I mean, not academic in the sense of the technique, but academic in the sense of the conversation that's akin to the conversation happening around physics or any other academic discipline, where we explore ideas related to this kind of thing. And there is a certain amount of objectivity that can be had, I think.
Benjamin Park, last word to you.
I don't think I'm the best to judge. But I can speak from a personal layman's perspective. I don't find the transcendent or sublime within that type of art that I generally seek after.
Benjamin Park, he's a scholar and a blogger on Mormonism and American religious and cultural history, a PhD candidate at the University of Cambridge. We should say that he joined us from the BBC studios in Cambridge. Benjamin Park, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
And Adam Bateman, he directs the Central Utah Arts Center in Ephraim. Adam, thanks.
Thanks, Doug.
I'm Doug Fabrizio.